This is a speaker meeting. Romolo here will speak for 10 minutes, and then he will pass the mighty baton over to Dan, who will speak for 40. Take it away, honey.
Thank you. My name is Romolo. I'm an alcoholic. It's really an honor to be here today and to be able to speak. I've been in this program for about 7 years now, and this is only the second time I've been able to share, and that happened in the span of the last 2 weeks. So it's kind of interesting how that starts to come around. I was thinking about it today, of course. I was going over in my head what I was going to talk about and all that. And one of the things that came up is about 8 months ago, I used to come to this meeting when it was back at the old location. And I was still in rehab. And at that point, they were letting me get out to meetings and go, check out meetings in the area. And one of the things that came to mind is that my perception has changed a lot in this last year, because I just remember showing up in... Despite the fact that I still have a lot of fear right now because I'm in the front of all of you guys, just showing up and feeling like still kind of in a fog and a lot of fear and a lot of anxiety to be around other people that are like myself, and now I feel a lot more comfortable in the rooms, I can come around and I actually feel like I can look people in the eyes and I can say hello, I can shake hands, and that's been really important for me in order to stay sober this time around. So I guess I'll qualify a little bit. I was born in Venezuela. My dad was an alcoholic and a coke addict. My mom was a student from Sonoma State, from an Irish middle-class family. Grew up in Sonoma. And my dad was very abusive and just belligerent, so she left him when I was a baby. So we moved back to California when I was about 6 months old. And I grew up basically with my mom and two of my aunts for like the first 6 years of my life. And then my mom remarried my stepdad, who I just basically call dad because he raised me and he's Mexican. So basically, my mom was a middle-class Irish girl that really liked Latinos. I guess I kind of say that because... when I was growing up, and my mom would always tell me that, when I started to drink and stuff, that I was playing with fire, because she had seen the way that my dad would react to the substances, and I never really took that to heart. I thought, well, everyone else is doing it. I'm young. I should be drinking too. That's probably what I should be doing right now. But lo and behold, mom was right, and it didn't take me that long. I was pretty much like a goody two-shoes up to about the age of 17. I did what I was told. I was a little Catholic boy. I went to school. I played sports. I wanted to excel in all that. And then when I was about 17, I started to experiment with marijuana and alcohol. And this shift kind of happened pretty quickly. I went to being like a good little kid to basically like, fuck everyone. I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want. And I found out that I had a lot of anger and resentment, inside. And that's kind of was my driving force for like the next 5 years, by the time I was, from the get-go, I was pretty much drinking alcoholically, I remember my first drink, it was me and my buddy, and we were at my parents' house, and they were having a party, and we snuck some Budweisers, and I specifically remember that we took 4 Budweisers. And I drank my first 2, and I was loving it, I was on top of the world. I was, jumping around my room saying that my face was numb and that there couldn't be a better feeling, And my buddy was just kind of like, well, whatever. He had like 1 beer, And I'm, of course, being the alcoholic that I am, I just went and I drank that 3rd beer. And so, honestly, I feel that I was pretty much an alcoholic from the get-go. And, high school was kind of like that as well. I thought it was normal that everyone was getting wasted and partying, but the truth of the matter is that I was very different, my friends would drink, and then they'd find a point when it was, like, time to stop, It's time to stop. It was probably, like, 3 a.m., which is still pretty late in the night, but they're like, all right, we're good. We had our fun. It's time to go to bed. And I'd be that guy that was still up drinking throughout the night until the next morning, And, it just... That's just kind of how I drink. It was all or nothing. Once I put the alcohol in my system, I can't really stop, And so it started to get worse and worse. You know, it's a progressive disease, and I moved around a lot. I pulled a lot of geographics, and it was very hard for me to feel like I belonged somewhere. You know, I always kind of had this feeling of being the outsider, you know. And in a way, like, inside of my family, I am kind of that outsider because you know, I'm the only son that's born from a different relationship, you know. And so in a lot of ways, I would always feel kind of different, or that I reminded my mom of kind of this past painful relationship that she had been through, you know. Anyway, it got pretty bad. It kept getting worse and worse. I moved to Argentina, and that's when my drinking really took off. I was basically becoming a blackout drunk, wandering around Buenos Aires, not knowing how I had gotten home or really where I had been the night before. And then, you know, I decided to move back home because obviously Buenos Aires was the problem. So I did that. And on the way back, I found out my grandpa had died. So I decided to stay in Mexico and kind of mourn his death. And he was an alcoholic too. So the only way I knew how to do that was to drink myself into oblivion with my cousins. So I did that for a while. And long story short, ended up on a balcony in a blackout and was, you know, kind of doing the whole tightrope act on the balcony, and I fell off the balcony. And so I literally landed face first on the cement, which was kind of a wake-up call. you would think that would stop me from drinking, but as soon as I was off of the pain medication and the liquid enchiladas that my tia was making me, I was fucking drinking again, you know? That's what I was doing. I was wandering around Mexico, toothless, unrecognizable, and I was getting shit-faced on my dad's money. And one night, I spent a lot of my dad's money, woke up the next morning after a blackout, and I just broke down, and I started crying, and I called my parents, and I told them I needed help, that I couldn't control this. And at that point, I was 22. So it took me about 5 years to reach my bottom. And I moved up here and went to CDRP, and that kind of started my journey in recovery, you know? And it's been 7 years since. So it took me 7 years to have about the 14 months that I have now. So I've been in and out a lot. You know, and one of the things that I hear a lot in these rooms, which rings really true for me, is keep coming back, you know, and that's what I've been doing. I just keep coming back and I keep coming back. And honestly, I don't know exactly what has happened this time, but I feel like something has clicked for me. I feel like I have more willingness to actually take the suggestions that are given to me. Because no matter how hard I fucking tried, I can't drink like a normal person. You know, I did try every possible way to be able to drink like a normal person because I fucking love alcohol and I didn't want to let it go. You know, and I guess, you know, I've just been beaten to a state of willingness, you know. And so this time around, I'm trying to do things a little differently. You know, I'm actually working the steps with a sponsor, which I'm really grateful for. I'm not perfect. I've been kind of stuck on the ninth step right now. I'm supposed to be writing letters and I haven't been doing that. You know, for me, it's one thing that also is really important is to stay out of my head because I have a very fucked up way of thinking. So I need to think with my feet, which is another suggestion that I was given, and I try to do that as best as I can. And for me, it's very simple actions that if I do them on a daily basis, it actually helps out a lot. Like making my bed in the morning is huge for me. Praying in the morning, even if it's just like, God, please help me get through this day sober. You know what I mean? And I found that if I do these little sequence of suggestions that are given to me, it's a lot easier for me to go through my day without having a complete fit of rage, you know? Like now I'm employed and I've been there for about 10 months now, and I think that's the longest I've been able to hold a job in my entire grown life, you know? I'm learning that, like, in a lot of ways, I'm still a little child, you know? And we kind of have an ongoing joke in our house because I live with a bunch of sober guys, you know, and like it's as simple as cooking dinner, you know, and then we're excited and we say to ourselves, this is some grown ass man shit. We're cooking each other, you know, we're making dinner. And, and you know, that's the type of stuff that really like keeps me afloat is, you know, doing the simple things and trying to stay in the middle of the herd, you know, sticking around other people that are sober. And I'm amazed at like how I go through my day now and I really don't encounter a situation where alcohol is in front of me or easy for me to just grab and take that first drink. You know, I've pretty much put myself in the middle of the herd so that I can't get picked off as easily, you know. Let's see. You know, I've struggled a lot with the whole spirituality thing, because I was very resentful towards the religion that my parents had chosen for me, you know. But I'm coming back around, you know, and now I can actually, like, talk to my mom and not get in a huge-ass argument about the effects of the Catholic Church on the indigenous people of this continent, you know. Like, I can just, like, respect her for who she is and realize that that works for her, you know. And it works for my dad as well. He's come a long way ever since he's gotten more involved with his particular faith, you know. And I can respect that now and realize that that isn't me and that's not my problem. That's their problem, you know. And I can choose any spirituality that I want, and that's really important to me, you know, because I do not like to have shit shoved down my throat, you know. It pisses me off. So that's another thing that I really love about this program, is that it's an opportunity for me to be able to explore and to find my own spirituality, you know. And there are like 80-something different heads in this room and souls in this room that have different views on spirituality as well. And I can talk to every one of you and ask you what your view is on God, you know? And I have the openness to listen and to take what applies and to let the other shit fly, you know? And it's good, you know? I woke up today and I didn't have a hangover. I went to work. I did a relatively good job. And then I went home. I watched some football. I drank some coffee. I took a shower. And I came here. You know? It's really simple, but it's also what keeps me alive. And thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Come on, man.
All right. I'm Dan, I'm alcoholic.
Yes.
Thank you for asking me to do this. It is a privilege and honor to be asked to participate in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, this isn't my favorite form of service, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. It seems hot in this room. It's probably because I'm sitting up here. But anyway, it is a privilege, you know, and I say it's a privilege because there's a lot of people that drank the way that I drank, you know, and have done things that I've done that, you know, I've attended their funerals, you know, or received letters from them while they were incarcerated, you know, in hospitals and institutions. And you know, the reality is most, you know, people who are afflicted the way that I'm afflicted don't get to come here and do what I'm doing right now or, you know, even get to grace the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I mean? And why it is that I'm, you know, up here, and they're not, is still a mystery to me. You know, and I say that it's an honor because, you know, if there's anything that I was ever good at in my entire life, it was, you know, throwing it down the drain, you know, and harming other people and, you know, letting people down and getting loaded, you know. And the fact that somebody would ask me to come and share, you know, experience, strength, and hope about how, you know, I've been able to stay sober is, you know, again, beyond me. You know? So welcome if you're new. There's quite a few people who are new tonight. Welcome to you guys. Welcome to those of you who may not have said that you were in your first 30 days or visiting or whatever. When I came around this program for the first time and even the second time, you know, like that whole like thing that we did at the beginning where you announce yourself and say your name and shit, like I would have gone outside, you know, and come back. Like, I did not, I didn't want to get to know you guys. You know, you guys scared the shit out of me. So welcome if you've, you know, fall into that category, or whatever category you fall under. If booze, you know, if booze has kicked your ass, this is a good place from my experience. I have a sobriety date. It's April 2nd, 2012. I have a home group. It's called Room to Grow. It meets Thursday nights in Danville at 7:30. If you're ever out that way, please come check us out. It is my favorite meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a meeting that I could show up to, and somebody can ask how I am, and I can tell them I'm fine, and they can tell me I'm full of shit. And just so happens that I might be full of shit, you know, more often than not, and so I need that, right? And it's also a meeting where you know, I get the opportunity on occasion to do that for other people, right? And I need that too. I also have a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor. And what that guy has done for me is taken me through the 12 steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and showing me how to take those steps into my life is a way of life. I've had the privilege of sponsoring other men in this program. I currently don't have any guys that I'm working with at the moment, but that's been a tremendous blessing over the years. 40 minutes is a long time. I'm not really sure I can go that long, but I'm going to try. What it was like is, from my earliest recollection, I can remember being afraid. Afraid of you, afraid of what you thought of me, afraid that if you figured out who I was, you wouldn't accept me, right? And that's as far back as it goes, right? And that doesn't make me alcoholic, you know, but, you know, when I found booze, right, that all that noise, all that chatter in between my ears turned off, right? And I didn't care. I didn't care what you thought about me. I didn't care any of it, you know what I mean? It just turned off. And all of a sudden, it was like I found, you know, the missing puzzle piece, right? And I fit in the world, and I had all of a sudden, I had found, my life had, you know, found purpose, and it had found meaning, right? And it really was, it was like Bill describes, you know, in his story, I discovered alcohol, you know what I mean? And it was an epic discovery. And come to find out that that's not everybody's experience, you know? And I knew, you know, right out of the gate that wasn't everybody's experience, you know? There was, you know, those feelings of separation that I had previous to picking up that drink, they came back, you know what I mean? And I started to run around with people that like to get loaded the way that I like to get loaded, which is, you know, if my eyes are open, I want to be loaded, you know what I mean? I don't view the world right, you know. It's a hostile environment out there, you know. The way that my brain perceives, it's fucking hot. The way my brain perceives the world is it's a hostile place, you know. And everybody's out to get me, and everybody likes each other more than they like me, and it just I just don't fit, you know what I mean? So loaded, it works. So I stayed loaded all the time. And so from like 12, 13 years old, I surrounded myself, like I said, with people that like to party like that, right? And I seemed to have a knack for it. I seemed to have the ability to, you know, find the right amount of stuff and go to the right house and have the driver and have the guy with the fake ID and have the alibi and have all of it. You know what I mean? I was pretty good at it, you know? You know, and I had things that were important to me in my life, you know, prior to picking up, you know, that drink. You know, I had goals, I had, you know, family members and friends and sports and school kinda. You know, I had, you know, good stuff going on in my life, you know. And you know, that stuff immediately took a back seat to getting loaded. You know, it just and it wasn't like a conscious decision, it was just the way that it happened. And so I don't know if I'm gonna be able to go 40 minutes. I gotta like tell some stories or something. So I had consequences, right? When you get loaded like that at 12 and 13, 14, 15, you know, you get consequences, right? And I had those consequences, right? I had you know, started getting in trouble with, you know, at home, and then I started getting in trouble at school, and I don't know, it's a progressive illness, right? And my consequences got progressively worse, you know. And for a period of time I was able to justify and rationalize those consequences and say that, you know, it wasn't my fault, right? It was her fault or their fault or his fault or your fault, but it was never my fault and it was never booze's fault, right? Booze was the solution, it was not the problem, right? And I had all these people, you know, parents or girlfriends or vice principals or teachers. You know, I mean, I had a lot of people that were looking out for my best interest, and they would tell me things like, you know, maybe you shouldn't drink, or maybe you should take a look at this, or, you know, whatever. And I just thought, you don't understand. You know, that was the tape that kept playing over and over in my head, is that you don't get it, you know. And if you had the problems that I had, and if you felt the way that I feel, and if booze did for you what it did for me, you would drink like this too. And I couldn't understand how people would go, how they could make it in the world without, you know, being loaded like that. It just didn't make sense. You know what I mean? And it was like I was looking on the other side of, like, you know, a glass wall, right? And it just didn't add up. And so like I said, the problems got worse and worse, and eventually and it wasn't like one particular thing, but eventually I started to figure it out that that booze was a problem, and I would start to have these moments of clarity, you know, and I would get into these jams, and I would take God off the bookshelf, and I would say, all right, God, if you get me through this one, I will never do this again, right? And I would mean it. I would mean it with every fiber of my being, right? I remember, like I said, I got to tell some stories. I remember on prom night, it was like junior prom or something, and I thought, you know, I had drank all night long, and it was like 5 a.m, and then done a bunch of, you know, stuff to help me keep drinking all night long, and I thought I was going to have a heart attack, and I fucking meant it. I was like, God, just get me through this one, and I'll never do this again. Like, and I got it, and I saw my life, and it was like, you know, one of those near-death experiences or whatever, you know, and then I fell asleep, right? And I fell asleep, and then I woke up the next morning, and, you know, I went outside, and they were smoking a joint, and, you know, like, I went for the joint, and there was no, like, well, maybe I shouldn't, or how about what happened last night, or whatever. It was that strange mental blank spot that is talked about in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's mental twist, right? And it was just like all that stuff went right out the window, you know. And that was just one of many times where I would have these moments, right? And I would swear it off, and I would mean it, and then I would find myself loaded within a very short period of time. I mean, that resolve usually lasted like all of Sunday, maybe. And that was it, you know. And you know, that's after you go through that for a little while, it's a pretty defeating feeling, knowing that you really want to stop doing something, and knowing that that thing is ruining everything good that you have in your life. Right? I mean, that's what started to happen, is it started to strip everything that meant anything to me in my life, right? All those goals, you know what I mean? Like the school stuff, or, you know, like college, or sports, or, you know, my family life was, you know, was just in shreds, you know what I mean? I mean, my mom, you know, the poor thing, she would cry herself to sleep, you know, I'm sure every weekend, you know, wondering if I was going to come home, you know, and I'd show up belligerently drunk and blacked out or whatever, you know what I mean? Somehow I'd make it home, and usually driving home, you know, and she'd be right there at the door waiting for me, you know, and the delusion and the denial was so strong. It was like, I would tell myself, well, I'm not doing, you know, I'm the one doing this, right? I'm not doing anything to you. And I just couldn't conceptualize, you know, how much I was harming her, right? And I have a younger brother, you know, who's 5 years younger than me, and he's watching all this, right? And he's up, you know, keeping, you know, trying to help her keep it together, right? And I just battered them, you know what I mean, over and over and over again for years, right? Thinking that, you know, that this is my problem, or it's my life, and, you know, just stay out of it, and I'm a man, and this and that, and it was ugly, man. It was really ugly, you know? And so I'll throw a little story about, like, the insanity of how strong it was. There was one evening where I crashed a car into a tree, right? And I was the designated drunk driver, right? As I intended to be, right? Because nobody wanted to leave the house as early as I wanted to leave the house to start drinking on the weekend. So I ended up driving the car. And I crashed the car, and I crashed into a tree, and I totaled it out, and it was pretty bad, you know. It was like a Jeep, and the wheels were facing this way, and the four-wheel drive train was busted off, and it was scraping on the ground, and you know, I drove it like a half mile away and parked it at my buddy's house, and I had fallen asleep at the wheel, right? And I woke up, and there's the tree, and so, you know, I got the fuck out of there. And so we get to my buddy's house, and I had a friend in the car with me, right? And I looked over at him, and I said, "Hey, bro, why didn't you grab the wheel when we went over the curb?" And he looked at me like, you know, what's the matter with you, you know? Like, and there was not, you know, at that time, there wasn't a thought that came into my head like, oh, you know, maybe booze is getting in the way, or maybe booze is causing you problems, or maybe you just, you know, risk, you know, your oldest friend, a friend of 20 years, you just risked his life, or, you know, maybe your mom's going to be a little worried, or none of it. It was his fault, you know. And that's how thick the veil of delusion is for me, you know. And sad to say, I have a lot of stories like that, you know. And that went on for a very long time. And why it is that, you know, it took so long for the lights to come on, I really don't know. You know, I really don't know. And I don't know that the people who cared about me and who were, I surrounded myself with paid for my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I mean? I didn't earn this. You know, they paid for it. So anyway, fast forwarding a little bit, I was 19. I got into a DUI car accident. I flipped a truck. I had two people in the vehicle. Thank God, you know, by the grace of God, nobody was injured or killed in that accident. But I had another one of those near-death, you know, wake-up call type experiences, right? I saw my life flash before my eyes, and it scared me, you know? And it felt like I had woken up after, best way I can describe it is, it felt like I woke up, you know, after, you know, whatever it was, 7 years, and it was like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, right? And I had no idea, really, like a long blackout. Like, I had no idea how I had ended myself up where I was, right? And I remember being a kid and being kind of innocent, right? And having, you know, being out on a bike and, you know, or just before I needed a substance in my body before I could, you know, get out and face the world. You know what I mean? And I'm sure we all can trace ourselves farther, you know, that far back. I remembered that, you know? And then it was just like, I looked at my life now and it was just in a shambles. And I was, you know, using all these substances, and it was just, what the fuck, you know? And I ended up, through a series of events, getting into an outpatient rehab. It was either that or lose the place where I was living. And, you know, at the time I had no money, no job. No car, because I, you know, it kind of all happened all at once, and I was like, all right, what do I have to lose? And I went there, and I sat there with these men that were 2 and 3 times my age, right? And they told my story. You know, they said that when they got loaded, they got really, really loaded, and they caused a lot of harm. You know, and that's really my story in a nutshell. And they said, you're a young kid, you can get this now. You know, you may not have to make some of the mistakes that we've made, And I knew I wasn't even going to get to make them some of the mistakes that they've made. They talked about losing, you know, homes or cars or wives or whatever, you know. And I knew I wasn't even going to get there. You know what I mean? I had already had friends that were, you know, getting locked up. I had already started having friends pass away, you know. And it wasn't looking pretty, you know. But with that being said, I didn't know any other way to live. I didn't know any other way to function out and, you know, in the world, like I said, without drugs and alcohol. And so, luckily for me, in order to graduate from this little rehab, I had to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if it wasn't a requirement, I wouldn't have done it, right? And I showed up here, and I'd be in the back of the room, and I'd have my head down, and I'd have my best fuck you face on, and, you know, I would go right up to the secretary after the meeting was over, and I'd get my slip signed. I wasn't smart enough to know that I could just sign my own slip. I thought there was going to be like a quiz, you know what I mean, a rehab, or there were spies, or who knows, you know, I don't know what I thought about. So I get my little slip signed, and then I'd be on my way, you know, and I would talk to, I'd go to these like little, like, these small meetings, a bunch of old people, and they were like, they'd all be really stoked on me being there, and they'd be like, oh, you know, you're so young, good for you, and it was like, you know, it was like a little ego boost, right, that I needed at the time, and, but I came here, and you guys had something that I couldn't understand, right? You were smiling and laughing and joking and hugging each other, and it looked like you were genuinely happy, and it just baffled me. It was like, it didn't make any sense whatsoever. I thought, you know what? If these guys really drank the way that I drank, they wouldn't be so fucking happy, you know? And I felt like you guys all told the joke right before I came in and told the punchline, and then it was like, here I came, you know? And it was just, it was painful, you know? Being sober without, you know, the tools of this program, in my experience, is extremely painful. You know, I'm like a raw nerve, and that's how it was for a period of time. And eventually, I got cornered by a guy. I was waiting to get my slip signed, and I was like looking at the wall or whatever, you know. And he came up and he cornered me, and he was like, you know, he asked me if I had a sponsor, and I said no, you know. And he said, would you like one? And you know, by the grace of God, I said yes, right? Apparently, you know, later on he's like, so do you want me to be your sponsor? And I'm like, I thought I already said that, you know. Like, so maybe I didn't, you know what I mean? Or I said it in my head or whatever. But he ended up being my sponsor, you know. And I listened to what you guys had to say, and you talked about, you know, finding somebody who had what you wanted, right? And so, you know, luckily for me, this guy had some stuff that I wanted, right? He had a nice truck, you know, that he had nice clothes. Right, he talked about how he had a girlfriend, he talked about how he was in college, he talked about how he had a job, he talked about how he had relationships with his family, you know, he smiled sometimes, you know, and, you know, he had all this stuff that I had had at one time, and I had given away to get loaded the way that I want to get loaded, right? And I thought, all right, I thought I was, you know, I'm an angle shooter by nature, I'm lazy by nature, and I like to think that I'm smart. You know, and so I thought, all right, I'll entertain this guy just long enough and hear his little spiel, whatever he's got, you know, little speeches, and I'll figure out what the magic little thing that he did to get all that stuff is, and then I'll be on my way, right? Because this whole AA thing was great for you in these meetings and, you know, the events and whatever it is that you guys do, but, you know, I didn't need all this, you know? And so what happened is we started going through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And he'd do funny things, you know what I mean? I'd call him up with some problems, and he'd be like, you know, first he told me to read the first 164 pages. Right? And I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. And then I'd call him up with, like, the problem of the day, and he'd be like, well, you know, did you read, you know, the stuff I told you to read? I'm like, yeah, I read it, you know what I mean? But how do you get through, you know, the job or the girl or the money or the whatever, you know? And he'd say, okay, well, let's get together at this coffee shop, you know, and let's talk about what you read, right? And I didn't fucking read anything, you know what I mean? Like, I'd open the book to a random page, right, and, like, read, like, a couple paragraphs, and it might as well have been written in Chinese because I didn't get it, right? And luckily, you know, he had been through it before, right? And we'd sit down, and we went through the book page by page, you know, word by word, line by line, right? And he'd read a paragraph, I'd read a paragraph, he'd read a page, I'd read a page, right? And he'd talk about how his experience related to, you know, the content, and I'd share how my experience related. And what happened was, you know, I found myself described in the pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, better than I could have ever described myself, right? And it described, you know, the dilemma, right? And it described the on switch and no off switch that I have, right? And it described the mental obsession, you know, that when that even when I don't want to, you know, I cannot bring into my mind with sufficient force the suffering and humiliation of a day, a week, or a month ago, right? And it described the insanity, you know, and of how, you know, like, if you're allergic to cherries, you quit eating fucking cherries. But if you're allergic to booze, for some reason, I can convince myself that even though 99 out of the last 100 times, you know, I experienced pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, and this time was going to be different, right? Mm-hmm. And it was that lack of proportion, you know, and the inability to think straight, right? And it was the alcoholic life seeming the only normal one, and just all these lines would just jump out, man, and it was, it's powerful. It's powerful just even saying it right now, you know? 10 minutes. Good. Okay. and so I did what it, you know, what that book told me to do, you know, when it said pray, I said the prayer, you know, and luckily, you know, I had some conception of God, right? I had some belief that there was something out there bigger than me, you know. I wasn't sure what it was, but I was sure that, you know, he told me something. He said, look, he said, I'm not going to solve your problems, you know. Mm-hmm. And nobody, you know, no girlfriend or no job or no amount of money is going to solve your problems, mm-hmm. you know. There's no human power that is going to solve your problems. And you know what? I believed him because humans had been letting me down my entire life. And I had been letting myself down for a very long time, right? And I thought, like, I was humbled and beaten and broken just enough to say, all right, maybe there's a God, and maybe that God will help me, you know? And you know, it talks about being willing to believe is all it takes to open the door, right? And with that willingness, you know, that little mustard seed could grow, and that was my experience, right? And then so I kind of had, like, a sort of profound experience first time going through three, and I thought, this is all I need, right? Turn my will and life over to the care of this power that I don't understand, and that's it. I don't need to do this fourth step or, you know, any of this other stuff that you have. You know, it's great. I'm just going to go, you know, right to 12, right? I'm going to go 1 through 3 and then to 12, right? And I got into an extreme amount of pain, you know? And I realized that that I act the same way that I acted loaded, sober. I still don't know how to live life, right? And I still go out and I harm people. And I didn't have the booze to anesthetize myself anymore, right? And it started to hurt, you know what I mean? And locally, you know, I had two options. It was either get drunk or do this four step. So it took 3 months and 3 hours, right? 3 months of thinking about it and 3 hours of writing it. And I sat down in a coffee shop and, you know, like 3 cups of coffee later or whatever, and I melted it out and it was done. And I shared it with another man, you know what I mean? I'm talking a lot. And that was a weight lifted off my shoulders, you know, and there's promises that are described in the fifth step, and, you know, a lot of those came true. And then, you know, I decided to a couple months later, share the thing that I didn't want to share with, you know, that I was going to take to the grave, you know, and then that one started to eat my lunch, and then I shared that, right? And I think everybody's probably got one of those. And, you know, in 6 and 7, I got to look at the defects of character. I got to look at the 7 deadly sins and how they manifest in my life, and, you know, how I do everything alcoholically, right? And I do everything to excess, you know, and I need a power greater than myself to take that away, you know. 8 and 9, I got to go back and make amends to folks, right? Most of those amends that I have are living amends. They're amends that I still have to do today. And, you know, I had people that I thought, like, if they had ever seen me again, they would have come at me with the baseball bat. I would have if I were them. You know, and they offered me a lot of grace, you know, and forgiveness that I don't know that I really would have been capable of, to be honest. And And like I said, most of that stuff is living stuff that I have to act better today, and I fall short all the time. I don't really want to go through the steps. Fuck. You know, and 10, 11, and 12 are the steps that... what happened is, you know, I was introduced to this God in 2 and 3, right? And then I was taught how to have a relationship on a daily basis with that power. You know, and I say the word God because you know what I mean. I'm not religiously affiliated. I don't have anything against anybody who is. But, you know, I did find a power greater than myself in the steps, right? And through that, it changed the way that I looked at the world, you know? And that selfishness and self-centeredness that's described in the book stopped being as much of a driving force in my life, right? And I started to try to bring something to the table rather than take the way I had for a very long time. And you guys, you changed the way that I looked at the world. You know what I mean? You changed the way that I interacted with people, and you raised the bar to a point that I didn't know was possible. You know, and that's not a testament to me. That's a testament to you guys, and that's a testament to this program. If my experience says anything, it's a testament to a power greater than myself that has given me a gift that I definitely didn't do anything to deserve. You know, and the program and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have gone through things in sobriety and been carried, you know, through people in these rooms, you know, and watched other people go through things that I never could have fathomed going through, right? And watched the fellowship and, you know, these principles carry them through. And, you know, where... I got to kind of mention this. I don't really like... it's kind of weird. It doesn't really fit in the story so much. But, you know, I stayed sober. I had all this magic happen in my life, right? I resumed, you know, a place in the world that was above and beyond anything that I could have had previous. And, you know, I sponsored a lot of people. I went to a lot of campouts and conventions and events and meetings and just had... you know, innumerable amounts of blessings. And, you know, at about 5.5 years sober, you know, about 5 years sober, I started to think that I knew something again. I started to forget where I came from. You know, I had a bad AA breakup, right? And then, you know, I stopped being teachable. I stopped listening to the people that, you know, were going to pull my covers, right? And that were going to say the things to me that I needed to hear, rather than things that I surrounded myself with people that were going to tell me the things that I wanted to hear. And, you know, what happened is I unworked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I backed myself right out the same door that I came in, right? And I convinced myself that I could drink like a gentleman, right? And that my 5.5 years had, you know, I had found this God. And the big argument at the time was, who are you to tell me that my God is not more powerful than Coors Light? And I thought you guys had brainwashed me, and I thought, I'm going to take God with me to the bar. And I'm going to practice spiritual principles and drink. And, you know, about 2.5 years later, I woke up in a jail cell in solitary, you know, confinement, going... kind of in the same situation as I was when I got the DUI on the side of the road, going, okay, man. Going, you know, how did I get here? Like, really just scratching my head, you know? And if you had asked me a week before, a day before, if I wanted to get sober, I would have told you, go fuck yourself. No, I don't want to get sober. You know? No, there's no problem. You know, the problem is, you know, I don't get paid enough, or, you know, she's on my back, or, you know, like, when I'm drinking, I really cannot differentiate the truth from the false, you know. And luckily, you know, God intervened, and, you know, like I said, got me into this legal trouble. And at the time, it definitely didn't feel like God intervened. You know what I mean? It was pretty rough there for a minute. But you know, I had all these things, all these pillars, you know, in my life that I had built up, right? Most of them had been built while I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was able to kind of barely hang on to them while I was drinking. And what happened is those things were all stripped. You know, almost all of them were stripped, right? The girl and the house and the job and the check and the self-respect and all, you know, the freedom, right? Those things were all taken, right? And I came back into Alcoholics Anonymous crawling this time. And I had come back in a couple of times because I have, you know, I had a lot of friends. I have a lot of friends that, you know, are in here. And I couldn't stay, you know. I talked myself out of it every time. And why, you know, I have all the stuff, so I'm okay. You know what I mean? And it doesn't matter that I could spend my whole check at the bar on Friday night. You know, and it doesn't matter that I'm driving around drunk without a license, you know, blacked out, or, you know what I mean? All these crazy fucking things that I was doing, it was like, that didn't matter, because I have all this stuff. And so I got all this stuff taken, right? And then, you know, a judge put me on house arrest, right? And so I'm, like, grounded like a child in my house, right, with for 10 months, right? For 10 months, I was locked up in my house, and I got a lot of time to think, and I got a lot of time to reflect, and I got a lot of time to really see how lucky I was, right? And, you know, I'll kind of wrap it up with this, is that, you know, one of my best friends, right, that I met here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, a friend that I got loaded with a bunch of guys that I met in Alcoholics Anonymous, by the way, that's, if you've ever done that, or, you know, I don't really suggest it. It, you know what I mean? It got pretty ugly, you know, and it wasn't as much fun as it sounds like. You know, but there was one friend in particular, you know, who we, you know, we got along pretty good, and we even got along pretty good loaded. And he actually got sober, I think right before me, and then I was locked up, like I said, on house arrest, and they only let me out to a couple of meetings, and you know, I think it was like a week after I got off house arrest, you know, I got a call that that he had overdosed, you know, and you know, I had to be a pallbearer at his funeral, you know. And and he knew this program just as well as I did, you know. And he had been through the process just the same way I had been, right? And so what I know today is that this is a gift, that this is an absolute gift. And I also know that I forget that all the time, you know. And that's why I come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous on a regular basis. That's why I keep in touch with people who are in Alcoholics Anonymous on a regular basis. And that's why when, you know, people ask me to do things like this, you know, I try to do it. You know, and I want to let you guys all know that you did much more for me than I could have possibly done for you, is to remind me of where I come from. You know, and so, you know, I want to thank you. Thank you for that. And you know, just say once again, you know, welcome if you're new. You know, and if it takes a little while for the cobwebs to clear, that's okay. You know, and this is available to anybody. You know, they say it's available for everybody who, not everybody who wants it gets it. Not everybody who needs it gets it. But everybody who does it gets it. Right? This is a spiritual program of action. And if you do the action, it'll work. You know, that's been my experience. That's been the experience of a lot of people that I've come across. And, you know, I hope that'll be your experience too. So thank you.
Are there any A-related announcements tonight?